Remember when you were starting your career or starting something fresh? Or maybe you're starting now and it was exciting and new and you were learning and growing. You also thought that the company and your manager would help you guide your career path. Well, how's that going? My name is Todd Doherty and I host a podcast called Manage Me. I have 30 years of client, product, and operations experience from startups to retail to Fortune 100 companies. Listen in as I share real-world stories of business and life with solutions you can use. I'll have occasional fantastic guests that will share their insights as well. Come join me and learn real-world guides on how to be the most successful you and manage you. That's Manage Me Podcast and managemepodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, team, welcome back. This is Todd Doherty and the Manage Me podcast, season three. Season three is all about coaching and coaches, and I'm talking to lots of coaches. And I'm super excited about this coach I'll introduce here in just a moment. We got connected over LinkedIn, and the more I did research on what he is doing, the more fascinated I became. So maybe this is a little bit of a selfish podcast for me, but I hope everyone listening gets a lot of information out of it, and I think they will. So let me give a brief intro of what I've found around Phil Johnson. He is the leader of and the CEO of Master of Business Leadership, MBL, and he's here to talk to us about emotional intelligence. And what he describes, and it's really been sticking with me since our prep call on this, is Navy SEAL training for your emotional intelligence. I love that. So welcome to Manage Me Podcast, Phil. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks, Todd. It's great to see you again, and it's an honor to be on your show. Tell you about me. I just turned 69.
Excellent. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. That's awesome. And I've been an executive coach for the last 22 years, working with executives and organizations all over the world, helping them to achieve career, personal, and corporate success in the process of developing their leadership and emotional intelligence. So it's been a lot of fun.
Did you always key in on the emotional intelligence side, or did you have that? Has that evolved over the last two decades?
No, it's I've been on my own personal emotional intelligence journey for the last 54 years, long before it was called emotional intelligence or the emotional labor required to develop emotional intelligence. But I really created a program called Master of Business Leadership to help identify and provide a solution to a root cause problem for individuals and organizations. And that helps the byproducts of going through the process is emotional intelligence. It develops emotional intelligence, inspirational leadership, greater awareness, higher consciousness of what's going on in us and around us, freedom from ego-based fear, which leads to higher levels of trust and engagement, which guarantees career, corporate, and personal success. Now, I know that sounds like a mouthful, and it is, but it does. The MBL program creates remarkable results. And I can tell you, referring back to your introduction, the process is harder than hell. Yeah. It is like Navy SEAL training for your emotions. And the reason for that is that we have built-in resistance to change, both biologically and sociologically. But for those individuals willing to do the emotional labor required in going through the MBL program, the results are amazing. They're remarkable. And there are individuals and organizations that I've been working with for over 13 years, because the ROI keeps getting greater and greater.
Absolutely. And I was going to wait to attack this later, but let's dig into that a little bit. Is, you know, in your coaching practice and in working with individuals and companies, and so I'm sure you work with some groups, though, I think one of the hardest parts is, you know, there will be people that say, I need your help, but they may not be ready for your help, and they may not be ready to dig in. Like you said, it's harder than hell. I think that's what you said. And there's also a coach that I know that I used to work with, Chester Scott out in Ohio, and he says the same thing. This is not easy. This is really hard stuff. And I believe you can't do it on your own. I believe you need someone to help you through it and push you a little bit and ask tough questions and maybe not make you lay down in the surf and take waves for, you know, off the coast of California like Navy SEALs do, but probably darn near close. I imagine you're shaking your head. So I imagine, and I don't want you to put numbers to it, but I imagine, you know, most people just aren't ready. Is it most people? Is it a minority? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me answer it this way. There's only two sources of motivation that will cause us to be willing to leave our comfort zone in the pursuit of better results. One is pain, the other one is passion. Yeah. And for the most part, those individuals that are willing to do the work required are usually driven by pain. They're usually driven by an urgent desire for better results than they're currently getting. So you really need to develop an emotional connection with the desired result that you're trying to achieve. That connection is stronger than the fear you're going to feel when you move outside of your comfort zone in pursuit of that desired result. So, and you're right, most people aren't in that level of pain. They don't have that level of motivation. So they may want better results intellectually, but emotionally, they're not ready to do the work that change requires.
Yeah, and it's hard work. And it's, you know, it's that first step is of being aware of, okay, I believe I want to change either because of some fear or some, I love that passion, you know, love and fear or passion and pain. But it's getting the action, taking that first step, developing, I think you even said that, developing the habits to make sure that you're able to make that change. There's no shortcut, right? Yeah. Everyone wants a shortcut. Well, not everyone. Most people want a shortcut.
Yeah. And that's the difference between knowing something intellectually and knowing something experientially. You can't develop emotional intelligence or become an inspirational leader by reading a book or having a conversation or watching a video. The development, it's an experiential process, meaning you have to be willing to take the initial leap of faith of getting on the path and doing the work, because you can only connect the dots in hindsight after you've taken the leap of faith. And that's the single biggest challenge, because you can only the people that are doing the work required appreciate the value and importance of what it is they're doing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, those two sources for motivation for change, you know, become the drive. And I want to go to the next piece, which I think, and you tell me, because I'm still the newbie student here, but the relationship between emotional intelligence and then energy. We talked a little bit about that before, of, I think you called it giving away energy. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I want to preface this for our listeners that what I'm about to say is the central thesis of the MBL program, and I've been proving it everywhere in the world over the last 22 years. So here goes. What I'm going to describe is the root cause of all drama, chaos, and conflict in the world, along with the solution to drama and chaos and conflict. And it has to do with energy physics. So here goes.
Yeah, pay attention, everyone. This is you may want to have to rewind this and listen to it a couple of times, because I did have to think about this, but it does make sense. But the first time you hear it, you think, I'm not sure I understand that. But when you think about it more, it does make sense.
So we're only actually conscious about 3 to 5% of the time. The rest of the time, we're relying on our unconscious habits to drive our behavior and our results. And that's fine. But when we're born, we're not born with a conscious mind. We don't actually start to become conscious until we're about a year or so old. But we are born with an unconscious mind, and we immediately start wiring up our brain, creating the neural network pathways in our brain that become our habits that we need in order to survive, to fit in, to get food, that kind of stuff. And a lot of those habits unconsciously are causing us to give away our energy. And we do it in lots of different ways, in how we communicate, listen, take responsibility, make decisions, all sorts of ways. But when we give away our energy, it creates an energy deficit in us, and we have to, at the same time, be trying to steal the energy of others to make up for the energy that we're unconsciously giving away. And that dynamic of giving away and replacing energy by taking it from others is the underlying root cause of all drama, chaos, and conflict everywhere in the world. And what I do in the MBL program is I show people how they're unconsciously giving away their energy, and I give them better habits to practice to stop doing that. And when they stop giving away their energy, their need to steal the energy of other people goes away because they don't need it. And it's in that process that they become more emotionally intelligent, they become more inspirational leaders, they become more conscious of what's going on in them and around them. They become freer from their ego-based fear, which leads to higher levels of trust and engagement and guarantees career, corporate, and personal success. So those are all of the outcomes of doing the emotional labor required to develop the MBL habits that stop us from giving away our energy. Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense. And again, the first time you said it, I had to think about it. But, you know, then I found myself when I was talking about certain things or defending a position or having a conversation thinking, am I giving away energy right now? Or am I taking energy? You know, I found myself thinking about that. And it was really, really useful to think about it that way, from sort of a giving and sharing energy perspective.
Would you like another example?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So this is actually the second MBL habit that I coach people on. It's called authentic listening. And the key to authentic listening is not to take anything personally. How somebody feels about you, whether they like you or whether they don't, has nothing to do with you. It has to do with what's going on inside of that person. But if how you feel about yourself is based on how somebody else feels about you, who's running your life? You or them?
Of course, not you anymore, right?
Right. So if how I feel about me is based on how you feel about me, I'm giving away my energy to you to determine how I should feel about me. If I like me, Sorry, if you like me, then I like me. Right. If you don't like me, then I don't like me. Now, as strange as that sounds, excuse me, what I've described is all of social media.
Right.
People bend over backwards, giving away their energy to try and get other people to like them so they can feel better about themselves. The important thing to realize about that is that at the same time they're giving away their energy, they're also contributing to the problem. They're also contributing unconsciously to the drama, chaos, and conflict in their environment by trying to steal energy from other people, often using position-based power to make up for the energy they're unconsciously giving away.
Right, right. So, you know, I totally agree with you, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to phrase this question properly, but you know, in certain aspects of business, you maybe not necessarily social media, but advertising, right? You're putting yourself. Actually, let me even ask you for you, right? As a business person, you're promoting your business, right? I don't think it's the same thing as putting something out there for social media. You're promoting your business, but whether someone likes that ad or that offer or not doesn't have any effect on you. Well, I guess it has a business effect on you, but not a personal effect, maybe. But how do you remedy that, sort of the personal giving away energy, and from a business perspective, using like even LinkedIn for promoting yourself, it's separating the personal side and the business side of it. Is that how that best is explained?
No, it's actually easy. I'm not actually promoting the business. I'm looking to be of service. I'm looking for people that want help in getting better results than they're currently getting.
Got it.
I'm not attached to the outcome, but I'm making the MBL program and my coaching available for anybody that wants to take advantage of it.
Got it.
Let me give you another example related to this, of a company that's currently worth approximately $3 trillion and is doing about $500 to $600 billion a year in revenue. And their focus isn't on sales. It isn't on promotion. It's on service. As a matter of fact, that company's hiring focus is almost exclusively based on the search for emotional intelligence in their applicants.
Okay.
That company is Apple. Okay. That's why when you walk into an Apple store, that energy you feel is an example of a more emotionally intelligent environment. They're not trying to sell you anything. They're trying to understand your pain and, if possible, offer a solution to your pain. Whether you buy anything or not is secondary to their desire to want to serve you. They want you to have a great experience. And maybe you'll tell your friends and they'll tell their friends. But if you think about it, the energy you feel in that environment is a very different energy from the energy you feel in the stores surrounding that environment. That energy you feel is an example of a more emotionally intelligent environment. It inspires people to lower their walls. They become less resistive, judgmental, and attached to outcome, and they become more highly engaged. In many respects, because of the accelerating rate of global change, and the fact that we have a 500-million-year-old brain that doesn't like change, the development of emotional intelligence represents the future of organizational development.
Yeah. So back on Apple real quick, you know, and so the outcome is Apple has some of the highest grossing per square foot retail spaces, I believe, of any retailer in the world. I believe at least it's way up there.
Let me make a comment on that. And you're absolutely correct. You see, purchases are emotional decisions. We make purchasing decisions in the limbic part of our brain. They're emotional decisions. So after we've decided what we're going to do emotionally. Then we look for features and benefits intellectually to justify the decision we've already made emotionally. Right. So getting back to emotional intelligence, if somebody wants to deal with you, if they trust you, they'll find a way to deal with you, even if you don't have the best pricing or the best technology. Conversely, if they don't want to deal with you, if they don't trust you, they'll find a way not to deal with you, even if you have the best pricing and the best technology. So the development of your emotional intelligence enables you to literally outcare your competition. It enables you to develop deeper, more trusted advisor relationships than your competitors. And yeah. Apple is proving that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's see, where do we go from here? So you said there are three main challenges to developing emotional intelligence. What are those three challenges?
Well, there are three main sources of resistance to change, to any change. Whether the change is positive or negative, it doesn't matter. So two of those sources of resistance are biological and one is sociological. So let me just explain. The first biological source of resistance is that we have a part of our old lizard brain called the amygdala that for hundreds of millions of years has been trying to keep us safe and alive by making sure we never leave the security of our cave or our comfort zone. And if we do, if we take an action that moves us outside of our comfort zone, that triggers our amygdala to automatically secrete a hormone into our bloodstream called cortisol. And that the cortisol causes the executive center of our brain to shut off. And we go into what psychologists refer to as an amygdala hijack. Some people lash out, some people run away, some people freeze like a deer in headlights. And when that happens in conflict situations, sometimes people die. And when it happens in business or personal situations, relationships die. We burn trust. So as an analogy, if you think of your amygdala as a very frightened four-year-old child, the development of our emotional intelligence acts like a big brother or a big sister to quiet the amygdala response down and better enable us to feel the fear and anxiety that change and innovation triggers in us and move through it towards what it is we're trying to achieve, as opposed to allowing that fear and anxiety to keep us trapped in our comfort zones. So that's the first source of resistance. The second is our existing habits. We can develop new habits at any age. It's called brain plasticity or neurogenesis. But the new habits are always going to be weaker than the old habits. See, once we develop a habit, it's there forever. And the older habits have the neural network pathway that makes up the habit in our brain has an insulation layer around it called myelin. And that insulation layer is thicker when we're younger than when we're older. So even though the new habits may work better than the old habits, there will be an ongoing battle within us between our old habits and new habits for control. So that's the second biological source of resistance to change. The third is sociological, meaning the people around us don't want us to change. Because if we change and start to get better results, maybe they're going to have to change, and that scares the heck out of them. And the best way to ensure they don't have to change is to make sure we fail. So they can say, look, I told you so. Now get your head down and get back into the herd with the rest of us. So even though the MBL process works like hell, it'll work for anybody, anywhere, doing anything at any age, there is significant resistance we have to change. And unless you have a strong connection to a desired result that's greater than your fear, you won't be willing to do the emotional labor that better results requires.
That's right. Yeah. People find themselves in I forgot the author's name, but comfort crisis, right? They're comfortable. You know, the pain isn't too too bad to resist, or the passion or love isn't too great, so I'll just stay right here and things are nice and comfy.
Yeah, that's called a rational lie. We tell ourselves, we rationalize, or we tell ourselves rational lies to justify not leaving our comfort zone all day long.
Right. Right. Real change is real hard. So
real change is real hard. But it's also, it's interesting because once you get on this path and you start to experience the results of doing this work, you never want to stop. And you're actually looking for that anxiety because you know that on the other side of that anxiety is better results. Kind of like an Easter egg. If you notice, truly inspirational leaders with a high level of emotional intelligence are continually challenging themselves to move outside of their comfort zone and through the fear and anxiety that creates in them, because they know that that's how they will be able to grow and expand.
That's right.
So they don't run away from their challenges. They run towards them.
That's right. They kind of lean into the new challenges or the change or the new corporate organization or whatever it is. They lean into it.
And exactly.
They learn from it. But even more so in MBL process and in change and finding your emotional intelligence, we've talked a lot about how that individual makes change for themselves in emotional intelligence and, you know, finding either a pain or passion to force that change. But once that individual starts to understand, you know, when they're giving away energy and when they're not, and their emotional intelligence and being able to manage that better, I'll call it, the next level is, you know, like in the corporate world, or I guess any psycho situation when you're leading others. Can you talk about, you know, what you see when that happens, right? So there's the first part is manage yourself, which is what this podcast is all about, right? Manage me. But the next level is manage and drive others.
Yeah. Good question. What we've been talking about so far is the methodology for individual change.
Right.
And there's a separate methodology for organizational change, but it begins with individual change. And think of an organization, this gets back to the energy physics. Think of an organization as a big pool of energy. As you develop more and more people in the organization with these capabilities, I call them sheepdogs, you're actually draining the pool of negativity out of the organization that the others need to feed off of. And so the people that are most resistant to change are the greatest contributors to the toxicity of the organization, to the drama, chaos, and conflict within the organization. So once the tipping point tends to be around 20 to 25% of the organization. Once 20 to 25% of the people in the organization are learning how to stop giving away their energy, it kind of takes on its own internal effect, and more people start moving in this direction. And you're actually reducing the drama, chaos, and conflict, and you're forcing people to either change or leave the organization for a more chaotic organization. So the development of your emotional intelligence, learning how to stop giving away your energy, can actually help the organization to heal itself. Does that make sense?
It does. And, you know, it reminds me of a personal story. I had managed, you know, small teams, 3, 5, 8, sort of, you know, team size, changed roles, got recruited over to a different role, and it was about 50 people. And we needed to make some change. Or I needed to make some change. And I had identified that there were certain individuals that were not ready for that change, weren't receptive to it, and were going to be holding me back and holding the team back, really. And as a new manager, I was reluctant to really pull the trigger and make the necessary headcount and team change to, you know, take out that negative energy and bring the rest of the team along. That negative energy, there was, you know, I'm being a little bit cryptic because if people know, if I give too much, they'll know exactly what the role was and who it was and all that stuff. But it's one of the biggest regrets I have. We still made significant change as a team, but it took way longer, like years longer than it needed to. And it's one of my biggest large team management lessons that I've ever had.
Can I give you some coaching?
Absolutely. I'll take it.
What you were doing is you were giving away your energy by taking responsibility for other people.
That's right.
And that creates what's called emotional cripples.
Yeah.
So the thing to know about what I call victims, the people that are most resistant to change, is that they're always looking to create more victims so they can feed off of that negativity. See, victims travel in packs. They have a codependent relationship with each other, but they don't like each other. They don't trust each other, and they can never lower their walls around each other, but they need each other. And if you don't address the victim behavior, it metastasizes through the organization like cancer. By ignoring it, you're helping it to get to grow and fester through the organization.
Absolutely. And that's why I have that regret. I called it the same thing. It was a cancer, and I knew it, and I identified it, and I wasn't, fill in the blank, strong enough, capable, whatever, to make that happen. Life lesson for sure. So, wow, that was awesome. Lots of great information. One of the reasons I'm doing this podcast series for a number of things. I'll be in no particular order. One of them is purely selfish. So I get to learn. Second item is so that lots of people hear this, because I think it's fantastic. And then third is hopefully, my hope is that I can help you, and that, you know, people listening hear something or multiple things, a nugget of information, and they say, "Oh, wow, I think I might need to talk to Phil. I think I'm ready." What would you say to those folks, and how can they best reach out to you?
I would love to talk with them, and I think you have my calendar on Zoom.
I will. I'll actually put all of your information in the podcast notes. So anybody listening, go to the podcast episode notes, and all contact information will be there.
I think the most important thing is if somebody wants to have a chat, if they want to meet with me and talk about whatever it is they want to talk about, I'd be happy to. And they can just get on my calendar, and we can go from there.
Have an initial session and see where you go from there.
Sure.
Before we end, is there anything else that we didn't cover, you wanted to cover, make sure that we covered for anyone?
The thing that I would leave your listeners with is a request that they consider developing, that they bet on themselves by developing their emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. It will guarantee that the rest of your life will be the best of your life, both from a career and a personal point of view. You will be astonished at the results you'll achieve. It's interesting, executives, folks going through the MBL program, often remark as they're going through it, how astonished they are of the results they're getting and the awareness they're developing about what's going on in them and around them. And I often ask them, I say, is there anything I could have said to you in the beginning before you started down this path that could have prepared you for what you know now? And they always say, no, there's nothing, there's no magic words. There's nothing you could have told me that could have helped me to understand what I understand now. And see, that's the difference between knowing something experientially and knowing something intellectually. The only way you can know that knowing something experientially, which is what the development of leadership and emotional intelligence is all about, requires us to be willing to take the initial leap of faith that change requires, because we can only connect the dots in hindsight after we've taken the leap of faith. So you can't develop these abilities by reading a book or having a conversation or listening to a podcast or watching a video. You have to be willing to take the leap of faith that change and innovation requires. So I really would highly recommend that you invest in yourself by developing your emotional intelligence. Bet on yourself. You won't regret it.
I totally agree. Let me add to that story about, you know, taking over this team of about 50 folks. By the way, it grew to 200, took on multiple other teams. So I was doing exactly what you just said. I was taking on all of that. And physically, later, years later, as I became more emotionally intelligent, smart, more, you know, capable and aware, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but more than I was, there was a picture of me at an event in this new job, different company, new job, similar size team. And my wife had this picture of me on this old team, and it was like two different people. I was pale and drawn and dark circles under my eyes in photo one, the old role, and, you know, flushed with color, probably put on a few more pounds, you know, in a good way, in this other role. And she said, what happened? I think it was just immaturity. It was just, and being intelligent enough to know what I can control, what I can't control, leading people in a different way and not trying to take it all on. I didn't know at the time that was, you know, emotional intelligence, but I think
being in toxic work environments is killing us. That's why the current level of employee engagement, according to Gallup globally, is around 13%. Low levels of employee engagement are costing the U.S. economy alone over $1 trillion a year. That's also why over 80% of all M&A and organizational development initiatives fail. There really is no alternative than learning to stop giving away our energy. And by the way, when we're giving away our energy at work and trying to steal energy from other people, all of those habits travel home with us as well.
Absolutely.
So we're carrying on the same kind of energy stealing behavior with our family and our friends.
Absolutely. I don't know when this all happened, Phil, but my mother-in-law, just about a year ago, said to my wife told me, she said, boy, Todd's really much more, and by the way, I've known her for 30 some odd years. Todd's really just much more patient and he's just so much more relaxed than he used to be. Again, I'm not perfect by any stretch, but that's why I do a lot of coaching as well. I haven't taken the MBL program. I talk a little bit about emotional intelligence, but you are the expert on it. But I do talk about some of the similar things and using the lessons that I've gone through in my career and try to help, you know, these emerging leaders about, you know, these are roadblocks and stumbling blocks you are going to hit at some point in your career. And here's how you can be aware of those. And here's how to try to handle those. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for your time and your energy. I don't want to say you're giving it away, but you're sharing it with me and others. I will put all these notes in the podcast. If folks want to reach out to you, you've got books, you've got your own podcast that you recorded 40 or so some odd episodes, which I think will give people a flavor of some deeper areas that you share. And certainly I hope they can reach out to you and connect with you. And I do have one more favor to ask. If we could leave this door slightly open for a future conversation, and maybe we can touch on some of this again in a different podcast.
Todd, I would love that. And I also want to acknowledge and congratulate you for the journey that you're on and the leadership and emotional intelligence that you display. I really appreciate the work you're doing.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. Thank you very much. Great to have you as a guest. I really mean that. Super excited to get this all wrapped up and published and have people hear it, and look forward to seeing you succeed and myself learning more about this whole journey as well.
Thank you, sir.
I want to thank you for listening today. Really appreciate you spending time with me. Hopefully you learned something. I want to remind you that I want to hear from you. So if you have a question or input, remember, go to manageme.godaddysites.com or email me at manageme.podcast@gmail.com. On the website, you'll be able to submit a voice recording, something that you want to hear, something that you want to have on an episode, and I want to hear from you. I want to hear about your topics, your guests, your input, your feedback, hopefully good, but also bad. Talk to you soon.